American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Friday, February 18th, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, a bullshit-free zone. This is your source for independent media news that will give you the edge against the core political tyranny that is trying to enslave you. And what does that mean, trying to enslave you? It means trying to take away your freedom. Trying to take away your ability to do what it is, what you want, when you want to do it, provided you harm none. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all that good stuff. You can read the news stories along with me by going to my live journal, Sean_Kennedy. Underscore is my middle name. You know it will be time to turn the page when you hear me say, holy crap, I can't believe we're all still alive. But don't worry, I have got a whole new angle. You know, there's been a lot of depression that comes from reading the news every day. You get bummed out. And I've been thinking that I'm going to start putting a positive spin on the news. We shouldn't be worried about the gradual and total collapse of our society. We should actually look forward to that. Fucking we should root for that shit. Why? Massive climate change means that we'll destroy our ability to make war. We're not going to be able to ship troops across the world if half the oceans are frozen due to, you know, global warming and day after tomorrow type stuff. So, bada boom, bada bing, all the boys either come home or they just stop fighting, which will be good. So we got world peace. And there'll be very little law enforcement because they'll be too busy doing other stuff. I mean, there'll be law enforcement, like, in where law enforcement should be, stopping people from killing each other and all that kind of jazz. But, like, the MPAA, the RIA, they're not going to be getting any legislation time because we're all too worried about, you know, the massive collapse of our society and financial. So, really, you know, the WOGs, we're all going to be okay. We'll be fine. How are we going to freak out? I mean, we've got all this kit we need to survive. That's the whole point here, is that we're survivors. You know, I don't think it's, I don't really think it's that big of a deal. I think really, you know, we should be looking forward to the collapse of society, and that way we won't get so horribly freaking depressed when we read the news every day. Just a thought, just a particular angle, so let's see if we can carry on with that sort of thing here. I got a bit of feedback to start off with. Dear Sean, I was recently, I was conspiracy evangelizing recently to some coworkers when I found a hidden stash of NutraSweet packages. And, of course, my first reaction was to shout out really loud, this stuff is the devil, while holding up a packet for all to see. Way to look like a moderate buddy. One of my coworkers agreed with me, and to his surprise and everyone else, of course, apparently his mother had aspartame poisoning, and he pointed me to a website where I could get more information. And that was sent to me by No Delete. Now, good work, No Delete. That's rad. And as everyone knows, of course, aspartame is highly toxic and is not good stuff, and, you know, makes the baby Jesus cry. So nobody likes aspartame. We want to avoid the aspartame, avoid the chemicals. Just have some good old-fashioned fucking sugar. Give me the sugar. That's fine. I'd rather, you know, people say, well, there's sugarcane workers being exploited. Yes, but my brain isn't turning into sponge. So you have to kind of keep that stuff in perspective. On to sort yourself out. Dear Sean, I'm thinking... That's good. About taking off days as a security guard, as I've just found out my current wage slave job is not as stable as I once believed. It never is. It never, ever is. I've been trained in several weapons, courtesy of the U.S. Air Force. Hooray! From 9mm handguns to 50 cal full-auto machine guns. I'm a dead shot with a 9mm and any semi-auto sharpshooting rifles. I suck ass with bolts. Really? Which is odd, because generally bolts are a more accurate weapon. As you have been in security for a while now, is the extra pay involved in the sidearm carrying security guard worth it? The details I would be assigned to are things like armored car, bank security, etc. As I am in Texas, the concealed weapon license are near common, comparatively, and the pay is only a few dollars more per hour, average 3 to 4. I tend to think not. I may as well become a cop. The pay is enough to force my financial mind into the dilemma, but not enough to make me sign up immediately. I really appreciate your input. As a note, this job is for diversifying my income, not for extra pay time doing personal things, which would be nice. Well, you know, Owning, if you walk around with a piece of iron on your hip and you get $4 an hour more, then I would say absolutely do that. I mean, you got to understand that, you know, guns and knives and all that are the tools, but you yourself, you're actually the weapon. The gun doesn't kill anybody. You have to kill people. Now, you're not enforcing the law as you would with a cop. Being a cop is a nervous breakdown situation. You know, with the as a security guy, you walk in there, you're standing around, blah, blah, blah. You know, you got to keep your eyes open, make sure nobody's attacking you. But if somebody attacks you, it's pretty straightforward. You know, you dust them. That's it. You know, it's pretty straight up. So I would rather actually be an armed guard in Texas versus a cop in Texas any day of the week. And again, you know, the guns are tools. You're the weapon. If, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Yeah, absolutely get a job carrying a gun. You betcha. I'd go that way all the way. It'd be nice if you could get yourself some kind of a job where you sat in a booth all night and you could bring a laptop and get some work done or writing or whatever. But if you're not like a writing guy, that's the way to go. There's a shirt somewhere. I think it's on 7.62 Designs. My guns are my tools, but I am the weapon. I always wanted to get that shirt. It's a good one. On to the news. Follow-up. Schools have dropped the RFID tags. Hooray! The California grade school that required students to wear radio frequency identification badges has ended the program because the company that developed technology pulled out. The badges, developed by Incom, were introduced less than a month ago at Brighton Elementary School in Sutter. The school board was set to talk about the controversial policy until Incom announced it was terminating its agreement with the institution. We're stopping because everybody's freaking out. The system was imposed without parental input by the school simply to simplify attendance and reduce vandalism and improve student safety. It was a test, dude. They're testing on the kids. While many parents criticized the badges for violating privacy and possibly endangering children's health, some parents supported the plan. The school had already disabled scanners above classroom doors and were not disciplining students who didn't wear their badges. Well, does that mean that they were disciplining students? You don't have your badge. Where's your ID tag? Well, that doesn't really interfere with me learning. No, you must have the ID tag. You must have it. Well, the thing is, though, I'm here to learn, right? That's the goal here, is for me to learn. And I don't need... No, you need the tag! You know, it just goes on from there. Overreaction much? Now, this is what paranoia, how it will destroy you. In Oakley and PA, what's PA? Is PA Pennsylvania? Yeah, it must be. I guess so. Oley, PA, wherever that is. A student apprehended on his high school roof in a gorilla mask was charged. He was charged Tuesday with trespass and other crimes when his senior prank led to a school lockdown. No one was injured and police found no weapons on the suspect, so he just put on a gorilla mask. Matthew Patterson, or inside Oley Valley High School in rural Berks County, State Trooper Ray Albert said. This 18-year-old Patterson, a National Merit semifinalist with no school disciplinary record, was charged with reckless endangerment, disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and criminal trespass for climbing on the roof of his school with a gorilla mask. Well, shit, at least they didn't shoot him. He told police he donned the mask and gloves and climbed up on the cafeteria roof Tuesday morning in order to peer down through the classroom window. Woo-hoo-hoo! Oley Police Chief David A. Witt said in a statement. The prank was foiled when school staff saw someone donning the mask in the parking lot, scaling a wall, and called the authorities, who sent officers, a state police helicopter, and a bomb squad. Holy shit, over a guy in a ski mask? Like, come on now, it's a gorilla mask even. He wasn't even in a ski mask. According to police, Patterson said he wore the disguise and covered his license plate in the school parking lot so he could not be identified on school surveillance cameras. Well, at least he was thinking. The school, which sits off just on Main Street, Oley, has about 660 students. Oh, wow, so it's huge. School board members Robert Moore said his daughter, a sophomore, School board member Robert Moore said that his daughter, a sophomore, called the cell phone Tuesday morning to say police were at the school and students were under lockdown. She was not overly alarmed. In today's day and age, that's a precautionary measure, Moore said. Jesus fucking Christ, it's a guy on the roof with a gorilla mask on. You know, why don't you just go up there? Are you so terrified of the kids, man? You think that they're all, you know, psychos here in rural, wherever the fuck you are? You know, give me a break. It's not that psycho. Kids have been doing shit like this forever. Get your head out of your ass. Thanks for coming out. Now, in China, those crazy Chinese, they're turning AIDS into the new leprosy thing. And that's fantastic. This story just breaks my heart. There's an AIDS camp. Camp AIDS. Set up in China. It's like a place where they send people with AIDS. A hospital in North China's Shaanxi province has set up a complex for HIV/AIDS sufferers where they could receive treatment and make a living. In this camp. They make a living and receive treatment. So they work in this camp for money and receive. So it's like a labor camp for HIV people. Exuna News Agency reported Tuesday. Some 20 patients have been treated at the 90 Mu, which is like a six hectare compound of hospital wards. There's 20 patients there. Entertainment venues and farmland, since it's been open since July 24th last year. I'm sure they got a lot of entertainment venues. A couple of movies. In Linfen City Infectious Disease Hospital last year, reported rented the land from the Lisun village, some 10 kilometers from the hospital, with 1.5 million yen, which is only $182,000. Hospital staff called it Green Harbor in hopes that it could offer not only physical treatment, but also psychological comfort for HIV/AIDS suffering and their families. The area is divided into zones, treatment zone, logistic zone, and work zone. The patients and their families can grow grain, vegetables, and flour in the 70 mu work zone, and then sell the farm products to make some money. They also have an entertainment venue. An entertainment venue. What the hell is that? Is that like a theater, or is it a, what is that? It's an entertainment venue, a library, and a gym. There are 840,000 HIV/AIDS sufferers in China. While Chinese people's knowledge of HIV/AIDS was improving greatly, there is still widespread fear and bias towards the disease. As a result, many HIV/AIDS sufferers can work like normal people, although their symptoms have not fully developed. While different views voiced on the internet doubting the Green Harbor, a covert isolation of HIV/AIDS sufferers from normal society. They may feel abandoned by the society they're shrinking. Strinking, that's what it says, I swear to God. Labeled as HIV/AIDS sufferers by living in this kind of place, said one citizen, a Chinese online bulletin. Well, of course they're going to feel that way. Of course they're going to feel that way. Of course, if you're being chastised, I mean, of course, you'd want to, you know, live somewhere where you don't feel ostracized. But, I mean, everybody feels ostracized all the time. You know, if you're like a goth or something, you feel ostracized frequently, often. So, it's nice they got this spin on it that it's not a camp. It's not to put people aside. Okay, look at the size of it, okay? We're talking, you know, a 6-hectare camp, and you only got 20 people there? No. That's either experimentation or they're doing something with that. You know, I'm not for... There's no reason to isolate these people. There's no reason to spend the money to do this. You know, just carry on. You know what I mean? If isolating them turns them into like a leper-type concept. You know, it's not a good idea. And more paranoia in the school system. A massive overreaction to a chemistry teacher. Now, my chemistry teacher in high school, who I will not name because he'll no doubt go to jail, put the chemical formula for nitroglycerin up on the chalkboard. Got it memorized. He used to tell us stories about blowing shit up. That's what makes chemistry cool, is the fact that you blow shit up with chemistry. This is why chemistry is neat. This is why people do it. So when a high school teacher was arrested after students claimed he taught the class how to make a bomb. Okay. Anybody who wants to know how to make a bomb, all they got to do is truck down to the library, jump on the internet, and you will have any kind of bomb you want. Okay, David Paisky, 42, used an overhead projector in class to give instructions in making explosives to students at Freedom High School, which is obviously not that fucking free, including advice to use an electric detonator to steer clear of the blast, an Orange County Sheriff's arrest report said. In Pesky's classroom in Orlando, authorities found a book labeled Demo, which includes the chemical breakdown of powerful explosive, the arrest report said. One student said he set off a bomb at a golf course on January 6th and videotaped it, an arrest warrant said. The videotape shows an explosion. The voice of a young man can be heard shouting, authorities said. Everyone's all what authorities said. Paisky is charged with possessing or discharging a destructive device of culpable negligence. Paisky, who was booked in Orange County Jail Monday and released on $1,000 bail, declined to comment. School Superintendent Judy Cunningham said Paisky was reassigned to a desk job after he was interviewed by authorities. He is still earning his salary. Okay, well, yeah, at least she's kind of sticking up for the guy. Paisky told investigators he detonated chemicals in a coffee can by a ball field 4 times for his students. The sheriff's office said he did this as a chemistry project to show a reaction rate, the arrest report said. Okay, it's like fireworks, dude. It's fireworks. The guy's a good teacher. Okay, he's trying to make chemistry and science exciting. So you arrest him, and now he can't teach anymore. So we're going to be stuck with, you know, somebody like Ned Flanders teaching us how to make fucking bombs and never actually, you know, we're never going to learn any cool shit in chemistry. Well, that's gay. Now, Sim sent me this one. No swearing. Chafing over racy broadcasts like Janet Jackson's infamous wardrobe malfunction where she showed a breast. Oh, my God, she showed a breast. Well, so what? At the 2004 Super Bowl, the House overwhelmingly passed a bill Wednesday authorizing unprecedented fines for indecency. What? Rejecting criticism, the penalties will stifle free speech and homogenize radio and TV broadcasts. Bill's supporters said that stiff fines were needed to give deep-pocketed broadcasters more incentive to clean up their programs, clean them up, and help assure parents that their children won't be exposed to inappropriate material so you can keep their brains nice and fuzzy. The measure, which passed 389-38, boosts the maximum fine from $32,000 to $500,000 for a company and from $11,000 to $500,000 for an individual entertainer. So if I get up on a stage in the United States and I say fuck, you can get a $500,000 fine. Well, that seems reasonable. The bill enjoyed a broad bipartisan support from lawmakers upset about incidents like Jackson's breast bearing. Jesus Christ! Not Jackson's breast. No! The famous wardrobe malfunction at the 2004 Super Bowl halftime show. Well, who gives a shit? It's a breast. This isn't fucking news. This is stupid. And they're bringing in, like, propaganda laws saying that if you say something that's considered a swear word, it's 500 grand? Jesus. This is a penalty to make broadcasters sit up and take notice. This is a penalty that's, yeah, broadcasters, individuals are going to get killed. Representative Joe Barton of Texas, chairman of the Energy Commerce Committee, that sent the bill to full house. This legislation makes great strides in making it safe for families to come back into their living room. Safe for the family. You can come back in the living room. It's okay. We took away the horrible breast. And correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't there people out there who would think that Janet Jackson is attractive? I mean, she's kind of a good-looking woman. I'd be more afraid if, like, Roseanne Barr all of a sudden tore her shirt off on the television. Yeah, I'd be like, whoa, dude, no, that shouldn't be allowed. But Janet Jackson's hot. You know, come on. It wasn't that bad. She covered it up right away. It was almost burlesque in nature. You know, what's the big deal here? The White House, in a statement, said strongly supports legislation will make broadcast television more suitable for family viewing. Well, why don't you just do like they do in Europe, where they put it all on TV? Eventually, kids got to learn about sex anyway. Where do you want them to learn about it? On the internet? Dun-dun-dun. In the schoolyard? Dun-dun-dun. Or you can talk about it in your living room. Good God, don't want to talk about anything. Holy shit, that'd be terrible. The Senate is considering a similar bill. Any differences of the two have to be worked out before it goes to President Bush for a signature. Oh, I'm sure he'll stop it. Last year, two chambers were unable to reach a compromise. Opponents said they were concerned stiffer fines by federal communications commissioner would lead to more self-censorship by broadcasters and entertainers, unclear about the definition of indecent. Well, let's just go with the Christian one. You know, if it doesn't glorify Jesus, it's going straight to hell. More video game FUD in the market. Yeah, you can go be an armed security guard. That's fine. But whatever you do, don't get yourself a job as a video game tester. You know these video game testers who spend like 10 hours a day playing video games, and they play games like Grand Theft Auto and stuff like that? If all these video games really do cause people to kill people, now don't get me wrong, they're desensitizing. Yes. Yes. Video games and violence in video games is desensitizing. But it's different when we're talking about whether or not it teaches you to kill people. It doesn't. Okay? It's a lot different than, you know, watching it on a screen to desensitize yourself and actually whipping it out the hammer and dropping it on somebody. Okay? It's a little different there. Anyway, a lawsuit claims the video game Grand Theft Auto led a teenager to shoot two police officers and a dispatcher to death in 2003, mirroring violent acts depicted in the popular game. How about movies? No one cops ever get shot in movies. The suit announced Tuesday it seeks damages from the game's manufacturers, two stores that allegedly sold it. Yeah, they sold it to him. Okay, he's 18. The attorney for the two relatives of victims said Thompson is charged with murder, had played the video game repeatedly. He played Grand Theft Auto. So therefore, you know, the dude's obviously fucked up, okay? It wasn't the video game, guys. Thompson is accused of killing three men in 2003 after being brought to the Fayette police station on suspicion of driving a stolen car. Thompson allegedly grabbed one of the officer's guns, shot him, shot the other two, then fucked off in the patrol car. Okay? So I'm at the police station. The cops aren't paying attention. The kid grabs the gun, geeks three cops, and fucks off in a patrol car. Wow, that's pretty hardcore. That's not, like, you don't do that shit in a video game, and you don't do that shit in Grand Theft Auto. It's a third-person game. It's not even a first-person game. Like, holy crap. That's some hardcore shit. The suit alleges that Thompson purchased Grand Theft Auto 3 at GameStop and Jasper and Grand Theft Auto Vice City at the Jasper Walmart when he was under 17. The games, which depict killing officers and other acts of violence, are rated M, meaning they are appropriate for those 17 or older. What happened in Alabama is that four companies participated in the training of Devin to kill three men, attorney Jack Thompson said to the Tuscona News, which reported the suit's filing. That's the dumbest goddamn thing that Jack Thompson has ever said in his lawyer life. That is absolutely fucking retarded. Can you believe that? Did you think that playing a video game on any level will make you into a savage killer? What about chess? My God. I mean, let's not just stop at video games. Let's ban role-playing games and video games, and we'll keep kids back to things like Monopoly, where they learn how to, like, you know, rape their tenants for money and make them into, you know, total scumbag, money-grubbing, you know, fucks. Let's do that. Come on, guys. Where's the common sense? That's ridiculous. That is totally ridiculous. You know, maybe the global warming or whatever is coming will be a good thing, so we don't have to deal with shit like that. That's just junk. The GPS fences are going up. Now, this is a great spin. They put a great spin on this story. I've never thought of this one. This one's just mint. You know, once they do the RFID thing, right? No one's ever talked about the combination of RFID and GPS. You don't hear about that combination together yet. But you will. Oh, you will. Because instead of putting up actual fences for the camps, why don't we just have GPS fences? Listen to this. Victims of domestic abuse and witnesses to gang crimes could get special protections from satellite technology under new legislation filed Wednesday by Lieutenant Governor Kerry Healey. The bill would make Massachusetts the first state to use global positioning system monitoring to combat domestic violence, Healey office said. Under the proposal, courts would be allowed to force abusers who violate their restraining orders to wear a monitoring device as a condition of their probation. The system would alert the victim and police if the offender enters certain restricted areas such as home, workplace, or a child's school. The technology is already being used in Massachusetts to track the state's most dangerous sexual predators. Abusers who are caught in the excluded zones, which would be determined by a court, would be punishable by up to a $5,000 fine or 2.5 years in jail per count. Victims' advocates say this legislation is historic because it would shift the burden off the victim to protect herself or himself. Most often, the victims are the ones who alter their routines, or worse, give up their homes, jobs, and communities to try and stay safe. Really, the limitations are put on the person who is causing harm, and probably more than that is the approach, to make the most likely to be successful in terms of keeping victims safe, said Nancy Scannell, director of the Government Affairs for Jane Doe Incorporated. Since 1993, 260 people have died through domestic violence in Massachusetts. Gangsters and other criminal defendants could also be subject to such satellite monitoring under Healey's bill, which expands tools for prosecutors to protect witnesses and bring charges against those who try to silence them. Okay, that wonderfully wordy article, which is talking about how they're going to have GPS locators put on people so they can track where they are when they go into the restricted areas. And of course, you know, you're going to attack the pedophiles first. Well, they've already got it on the pedophiles, right? Sexual predators. We got it on them. So now we're just going to put it on people who are responsible for domestic violence. And what's the next step after that? Well, criminals. Any criminal gets one of these. If you've been, you know, three strikes, you're monitored, you know. And then gradually, well, why do we just have the criminals? Let's make sure that for the sake of law enforcement, let's just put it on everybody. So all RFID just broadcasts your location all the time. That way we know that if someone's accused of a crime, you can instantly pretend like you weren't there. We can know. Meanwhile, of course, this doesn't do anything for people who have any knowledge of hacking whatsoever. Like if they learn how to like mirror this and they could go kill people and then claim that their GPS locator was over here, so they were obviously over there, and now I've got a digital alibi. Isn't that nice? You know, who's thinking? Anybody thinking here? Now, do I think this technology is... Do I think it's bad? No, I don't think it's bad. I mean, I'm sure it can be useful, I suppose. But this bill going through, do we think we should be doing this? No. What I'd rather see is I'd rather see these people get some handguns. To be honest with you, if they're that afraid, they're afraid for their lives. Okay. Arm them. No problem. Arm these people. If they don't know how to use a gun, teach them how to use a gun. Off you go to the Gun Sight Training Institute. When you come back from there, I promise you, you'll be able to drop the hammer on any son of a bitch who shows up to take you out. Go right ahead. Now, of course, law enforcement is supposed to be doing their job, you know. So if you've got, it should be assessed by situation, you know. I mean, if the guy's obviously like a wingnut, and you honestly think that the individual who's been reported or whatever is capable of going and picking up a rifle and killing someone, then he shouldn't be on the street. That's what jails are for. They're not for people who play video games. They're for people who are hardened killers. Well, just a thought, though. You know, there I am using common sense again. You know, what was I thinking? And then there's this story here. Where's the uranium? Almost 30 kilograms of plutonium apparently missing from the Southfield nuclear plant is simply an auditing issue, it has been announced. Oh, yeah. No, I know it says that we're supposed to have 30 kilograms of this shit on paper, but that was wrong. That's a typo. The UK Atomic Energy Authority confirmed that 29.6 kilograms of plutonium, not even uranium, plutonium, enough to make 7 nuclear bombs was unaccounted for in auditing reports. Operator, the British Nuclear Group, said the discrepancy between physical and book inventories. Yeah, nothing to see here. Cows turn themselves inside out all the time. Yukiya said there was no reason to think any real loss of plutonium. It's only 30 kilograms. In a statement said, the material unaccounted for, MUF, required figures for 2003-04 were all within international standards of expected measures, accuracies for closing nuclear material balance at that type of facility concerned. So it's within standard. You know, you could lose 30 kilograms and it's not a problem. But Liberal Democrat environment spokesman Norman Baker said, if the figures are wrong, then it looks like a serious incompetence from an industry that deals with highly dangerous materials. The figures also showed that 16.4 kilograms of naturally depleted uranium was also unaccounted for. So it's, where's the uranium, where's the plutonium, and where's enough of the nuclear material to make 7 nuke bombs? That's what I'm talking about. But, of course, they've come back to say, we are extremely confident that the safety and security measures that we have here at the site. After all, it's only 7 nuclear bombs. Or 3 really badass nuclear bombs. Like, come on, guys. You mean to tell me that you guys can't keep your shit together long enough to figure out, 1, how much plutonium and uranium you have, and 2, where the fuck it is? You're not like that stuff's going to fetch a high price or anything. Okay. Never mind MP3s, let's focus on things like who's got the nuclear materials to make bombs. Because once you have that shit, everything else is real easy. You want to be concerned with terrorism? Like it said in Peacemaker, man. Or, pardon me, Peacemaker or Peacekeeper? With George Clooney. He said that don't be afraid of the guy who wants 7 nuclear bombs. Be afraid of the guy who wants 1. Now, Federal Drug Administration, FDA, scientist, has been censored. No other way to put it. The guy's been censored. David Graham, a high-profile scientist in America's Food and Drug Administration, has been banned from presenting new information about a controversial type of painkiller at a 3-day summit in their safety on the safety of these drugs, starting today. Dr. Graham, who works with the FDA's Office of Drug Safety, said yesterday he'd been threatened with being called insubordinate by the FDA when he said he wanted to include the findings of an unpublished study he had completed as part of his testimony on COX-2 inhibitors. The FDA has organized a series of hearings, which will include evidence from drug makers and scientists. Well, okay, the drug makers, obviously, can you trust their findings? In Washington, in response to mounting concerns about COX-2s and the allegations that the agency has been too slow to deal with the possible dangers associated with the drugs. Last September, U.S. pharmaceuticals giant Merck withdrew Vioxx after a study showed the blockbuster had increased the risk of heart disease 5-fold in patients on a high dose. Oh, that's good. In an attempt to head off further criticism with the FDA, the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Mike Leavitt, announced a new independent drug safety oversight board would be created within the FDA to monitor medicines once they are on the market, and to update physicians and patients with emerging information on the risks and benefits. Well, that'll be good. Make another committee. Dr. Graham has accused the FDA of ignoring worrying evidence about Vioxx when it was still on the market, said he wanted to include his testimony tomorrow. Details of a study completed with Gurkipal Singh of Stanford University School of Medicine. In this study, quote, talks about the risks of COX-2 agents and other drugs that are widely used, end quote. He said, quote, we think the findings are important. The committee might not think so, but it should have an opportunity to consider it, end quote, Dr. Graham said. So I'm like, yeah, if it's information that it's a doctor, none of these people are wingnuts, okay? They're all doctors. They're all concerned about people's health. Buddy's like, dude, we got some findings here that we need to bring before the committee. You should be allowed to present them. As well as Vioxx, drugs will be scrutinized with the meaning are Celebrex, Bextra, and two COX-2s made by Pfizer. So we've got, you know, big money here. Wouldn't want any evidence hitting the ground that might, you know, interfere with big money. No, no, no. We don't want any big money stuff because that would just be terrible. No one would want to upset those nice, wonderful, you know, drug companies, even though that we all know the reason why they're worried about it is because, well, there's payoffs. All these doctors, the entire FDA is as crooked as they come, man. Come on. Everybody knows this. It's just a matter for us to wake up. And, of course, and here's something that I could have told you. The Canadian brass are monkeys. Now, the Canadian Army was once upon a time a very noble army. It was a very good army, and there's a lot of guys in there who are still good guys. Okay? However, we're one of the most top-heavy armies in the world. We've got brass like you wouldn't believe. You can't throw a rock without hitting a colonel in the Canadian Army. Okay? So it seems that aside from being grossly overweight on top, they're also massively incompetent. A government official with National Resources Canada forgot secret cabinet documents in a seat pocket of an airliner. A computer loaded with sensitive Justice Department files was pilfered from a consultant's office, sending federal security officials into crisis mode, and a Treasury Board Secretariat, which handles hundreds of cabinet memoranda, was raped by the Prime Minister's bureaucrats for routinely photocopying the highly confidential documents. Well, they were wrapped and raped. Wrapped, rocked by rape. They were murdered. Basically, the Prime Minister's bureaucrats took them outside and shot them because he's been photocopying highly sensitive documents. The previously unknown security breaches are among the incident's detailed memos obtained by the Canadian press under Access to Information Act. The memos show that despite increased attention to national security since September 11th, terrorist attacks, confidential federal documents are sometimes lost, stolen, or mishandled. Now, this just goes on to talk about how grossly incompetent the Canadians are when it comes to handling secret data. Now, the problem here is that Canadians, of course, are not grossly incompetent. We actually trained most of the OSS, the Second World War. We did most of the military training in the Second World War. We have a history of very, very committed, dedicated, clever people in our Secret Service. But the problem here is that you've got a few clowns who have gotten themselves, they're bureaucrats playing in the spy field, and they have no business being there. So don't condemn Canada because of a few fucksticks that, believe you me, the people involved in the real security issues, like the CSIS crowd, okay, they would have these guys fired long ago. But just as you have bureaucratic bullshit, so do we. And for the record, I am sorry. It's not really our fault, but, you know, someone's got to say sorry to somebody somewhere, somehow. Now, here is a disturbing story which just trips me right out and would give you, like, if you're not encrypted right now, here's a good reason to be. An Italian DJ has been fined a record 1.4 million euros. That's like almost $2 million, okay? For using thousands of pirate music files in a nightclub near Rome. So he's got MP3s, okay? The police in the town of Rieti near Rome said on Wednesday they raided a popular nightclub earlier in the week as part of a crackdown on piracy and seized 500 illegally copied music videos and more than 2,000 MP3 music files. The police said the files belonged to a, quote, well-known Italian DJ. For the MP3 files, which were kept on the DJ's personal computer, okay, they grabbed his laptop, opened it up, went through the files. The DJ received a fine of 1.4 million euros because DJs are that rich. Like, he can pay that. How the fuck is he supposed to pay that? That's retarded. And furthermore, yeah, those DJs, they make big money. Yeah, they make huge cash, you betcha. He's making people dance, man. It's not really that big of a deal. Righty Finance Police said in a statement, they ought to be giving the guy 1.4 million euros. How do you suppose most clubgoers who buy these albums hear about the albums? They hear about it from the DJ. It's like free payola, you know? The Internet Federation of Phonographic Industry, IFPI, said the fine was the biggest ever slapped on an individual for unlawful music copying and the use of copyrighted music in the MP3 format. Holy crap. More than 7,000 legal actions have been launched against alleged uploaders in the United States, Canada, and countries in Europe as the music industry fights to stop piracy, which it blames for decline over a number of years in CD sales. Well, you know, I mean, what do you say to that? When you take a DJ, and I've met some DJs, they're nice guys. You know, they're about music. That's what they're about. Most DJs, most good DJs, really don't care that much about cash. You know, they're artists. And being artists, they want to do their art. They want to play music. They want to get out there and make people have a good time. And of course, that would be terrible to have people have a good time, you know. And so what we're going to do is not fine the guy like $5,000, which, you know, would be bad enough. You know, that this poor schmuck's got to pay $5,000 because DJ's got to scramble for $5,000, let me tell you. They're going to slap him with a 1.4 million euro fine. Now, maybe this guy can pay that. Maybe the dude's like Moby or whatever, and he's got, you know, $10 million or something. So he can shelve that. But I don't think he can. And furthermore, what kind of a legal precedent does that set? Does that mean the next poor bastard who they grab his laptop? Dude, encrypt your laptop. Encrypt your data. You have to. Otherwise, well, looks like you're going to be paying huge fines or go to jail. You grabbed your laptop, you have the wrong data. Free the information, dude. This is just sick and weird. Now, you ready for this one? You ready for this one? Okay, here's what you're doing. You're going to go get the film, the documentary film, The Fog of War. And you're also going to get the documentary film Trinity, the atomic bomb movie. And then after you stop Space and Time, watch those two films. Then I will give you this news story. And then you will immediately go buy yourself a Volkswagen van, a bunch of tie-dye clothing. And we will all haul ass down to Nevada. Although scientists continue work on similar nuclear bomb tests by computer, so they simulate it, Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman said Tuesday that the Nevada test site's ability to resume actual underground warhead detonations must be enhanced. Okay, so they're starting to do undergrounding nuke testing again? The Bush administration's commitment to step up preparations for potential resumption of nuclear bomb testing in southern Nevada comes less than a week after Utah Senate unanimously approves a House-passed resolution that urged the federal government not to return to the mistakes and miscalculations of the past, which have marred many Utahns, that would create a new generation of downwinders. Thousands of Utah residents downwind of the Nevada Proving Ground blame atomic bomb testing, which began in the 50s, ended in a 1992 memorandum, for an airborne scourge of disease and death due to radioactive fallout. Appearing before the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee, Bodman said the administration wants $2 billion in the next fiscal year for the Nuclear Weapons Stockpile Stewardship Program, which verifies that America's aging atomic arsenal remains operational. Okay, then. Last year, a bipartisan congressional effort killed increased funding requests to allow an underground nuclear test to be carried out within 18 months if needed, rather than the current estimated preparation time of 24 to 36 months. Although no such tests are planned, Bodman said the administration remains convinced the readiness posture of the nuclear proving ground must be enhanced. Well, if you're not going to be doing it, then why are you dressing it up? We will continue our efforts to maintain the ability to conduct underground nuclear testing and complete the transition to the 18-month test readiness posture that is mandated by Congress, he told the panel. Well, that's fantastic. Nothing I love more than having nuclear testing done on American soil. You know, if it wasn't for the fact that I had been able to see films like The Fog of War and Trinity, the atomic bomb movie, like, nuclear bombs are really, really scary. They're not like big bombs. Okay, for those of you know, it's entirely possible. I just thought of this now. It's entirely possible that people listening to this don't know much about atomic weapons. Really. You know, they think of the bomb, right? we see some Hiroshima footage, and you think that's it. You know, you think that's what a nuclear bomb is. Like, how much do you actually know about nuclear bombs, really? I mean, what do you know about them? Okay, you need to educate yourself, because the shit they dropped on Hiroshima was nothing. That was a beer fart, dude. Like, when McNarma is up there screaming up and down that we need to, you know, and this guy is, you know, he could be called one of the princes of darkness, okay? And he's saying that nuclear bombs are the worst idea ever, and we were so close to wiping ourselves off the face of the map. Like, do some reading on what kind of damage. I would highly recommend that film, Trinity, the Atomic Bomb Movie. I mean, that's the easiest, fastest way that you're going to get a nice overview of what atomic bombs are and why they're bad. And just in case you're in the mood for some horribly, horribly depressing shit, you want to get your hands on an old movie called Threads, which is as, quote-unquote, as close as you want to come to nuclear war. It's some scary shit. And yeah, it's designed to be scary shit, but that's what it is, man. Nuclear bombs are just terrifying. And I definitely don't think that people should be running around, you know, preparing to start getting into that race again. Let's go forwards, okay? Now, I'm going to give special shout-out thanks to PolySci for giving me an amazing daily hack. This one is so good. It's from the Vaults of Irowid. And Irowid is an amazing freedom site. I love this site. They're fantastic people. Everyone should go there. Everyone should donate. Irowid is a site dedicated to plants. Plants, pharmaceuticals, and the psychedelic culture. They have all kinds of information there. I warn you, if you go to the Vaults of Irowid, man, you will be there for hours. Great site. And one of the things they dug out of the Vaults of Irowid was how to stop police officers from searching you, because they do have to actually get permission in some cases. So, like, if you check out today's Daily Hack, it goes and says here, one of the main powers that law enforcement officers carry is the power to intimidate citizens into voluntarily giving up their rights, which is true. They do that. Police are trained to believe in their authority and trained to perform their interactions with private citizens with confidence. It is their job to deal with problems, and they learn to manage uncomfortable situations through strength. Most people, when confronted by police, get a mild panic reaction, become anxious, and try to do whatever they can to minimize the time spent with the officer. Because of the imbalance of power between citizen and officer, when a law enforcement officer makes strongly worded requests, most people consent without realizing they are giving up constitutional protections against improper meddling by the state in the private affairs of citizens. A common situation is at the traffic stop. A person is pulled over for a real or perceived vehicle violation. After the checking of the driver's license and registration, the officer asks the driver if they have any weapons or illegal drugs in the car. When the citizen answers no, the police officer asks in the strongest language he can, without demanding, to check that for himself. Would you mind if I took a look in your trunk? Why don't you step out of your car? Most people acquiesce the requests because they don't realize they have the right to say no. Acquiescence to the request. They acquiescence. They agree to the request. They comply. 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 That is all that, you know, you have to do, is just stand up and say, yeah, okay. But what if you don't stand up and say, yeah, okay? What if you actually say no to the cop? Now, this is a really dodgy, dodgy situation to actually, you know, say no to a cop when he's trying to search you. Like, trying to whip out the Bill of Rights to a cop is going to get you in some shit. So, when in doubt, okay, I'd make sure that you're not transporting anything anyway. If you've got something illegal, you should have enough brains in your head that you won't get pulled over by a cop. If you've got something in the car, obey the traffic laws, okay? Like, think about it. But if you get pulled over by a cop and you're clean and you know you're clean and the cop's just being a dick and you decide to say no to the cop, you better not have any plans for the next little while, because he's going to make your life as difficult as he can. Okay, you better make sure your car's in good running order. You better make sure, because they will try to screw you over. Because at that level, you got to understand, and people are saying, well, Sean, didn't you say cops are cool? Yes, cops are cool. But the problem is that they're overworked. They're angry people. Cops, it takes a certain kind of person to be a cop. Quite often, there's a lot of angry people who are cops, you know, and they deal with the scum of the earth day in, day out, and their hands are tied. They can't, you know, actually do any justice. So it's difficult for cops. I feel bad for them. I really do. So if you think a cop, or you know that you are in your right and you want to stand up for it, you can do that. And this article will tell you how to do that. But you got to be really careful, because if you start, you know, fighting back against the cops like that, Well, they're going to make your life a little difficult. That's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of the heroes of the modern day that are Jesse, Anonymous, Jesse, Grey Ghost, Robert Forley, Michael, Matthew, Matt, Kevin, Derek, Jesse, Desert Runner, Eric, Speaker, Jeff, Malcolm, Peter, Keith, Timor, WebLife, Richard, Greg, Evan, Matt, Drake, Levi, Ashton, David, Brian, Austin, Tara, Host Mojo, Jonathan, Adam, Mystique, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, Brandon, Art, Diremude, Peter, Jesse, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Dylan, Lars, Daniel, Anonymous, and Philip. And if you would like to help keep this very daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab so that you can get my ass to be able to buy me more coffee. And I'd like to give a special super shout out to some hard net runners who helped me out today. Astrofix, Sylvanus, Polysci, Ricky Rocket, Falweir, Psychofish, Valerian, Madar, Noog, No Delete, and Kevlar Gibbs. Thanks so much, guys. No digital baptisms today, but that's okay. If you want to have a digital baptism, and if you've got any information, if you've got some sort-yourself-out advice issues you want some info on, please email them to Newsreel, that is N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com, and I'll get to them on the air. And if you like the music in the background, because it's really tight, I really like the music in the background today, that you want to pick up the Goth Minister, all one word, album, Gothic Electronic Anthems. They're very, they're kind of electronica, but they got a good industrial feel. I really enjoy them. Check them out. Awesome, awesome group. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.
Well, the world and its double is how we styled this. This is simply a high visibility, flashy way of reminding people whose eyes fall upon that text that the world has a double. The world is not entirely or completely what it seems to be. Culture, and by culture I mean any culture, anywhere, anytime, gives you the message that everything is humdrum, everything is normal. In other words, culture denies experience. You know, we all have had, and even a population of non-psychedelic people have had prophetic dreams, intimations, unlikely strings of coincidences, all of these sort of things. These are experiences which cultures deny. Cultures put in place, I'm sure you've heard this word, a paradigm. And then what fits within the cultural paradigm is accentuated, stressed, and what doesn't fit inside the cultural paradigm is denied, marginalized, argued against. And we live at the end of a thousand-year binge on the philosophical position known as materialism in its many guises. And the basic message of materialism is that the world is what it appears to be, a thing of composed of matter and pretty much confined to its surface. The world is what it appears to be. Now, this, on the face of it, is a tremendously naive position, because what it says is the animal body that you inhabit, the eyes you look through, the fingers you feel through, are somehow the ultimate instruments of metaphysical conjecture, which is highly improbable. It seems to me metaphysical conjecture begins with the logic of the situation, and then proceeds in whatever direction that logic will carry you. Well, if logic is true to experience, then we have to make room in any theory for invisible connectedness between people, anticipation of a future that has not yet occurred, shared dreaming, all kinds of possibilities that materialism has denied. For approximately 500 years, the great era of the triumph of modern science, materialism has had the field all to itself. And its argument for its preeminence was the beautiful toys that it could create. Aircraft, railroads, global economies, television, spacecraft. But that is a fool's argument for truth. That's after all how a medicine show operates, you know. The juggler is so good, the medicine must be even better. This is not an entirely rational way to proceed. And now, at the end of 500 years of the practice of rational, quote-unquote, scientific culture, we're literally at the end of our rope. Reason and science and the practice of unbridled capitalism have not delivered us into an angelic realm. Quite the contrary. They've delivered 3% of us into an angelic realm, completely overshadowed by guilt about what's happening to the other 97% of us who are eating it. It's not a pretty picture, modern civilization. Most people in the world today are quite miserable, actually. They have very little hope. Their religions, their traditional value systems are being eroded by Dallas and Hawaii Five-0, which are on the village television every night. Lifespans are being shortened by pesticides, chemicals, all kinds of things in the environment. And there is very little political light on the horizon. So I believe that it's reasonable, looking at this situation, to say that history failed. And that the grand dream of Western civilization has, in fact, failed. And now we are attempting, with basically a carved wooden oar, to turn a battleship around. And it's a very frustrating undertaking. The momentum for catastrophe is enormous in this situation. But it's not 100% certain that catastrophe is what we're headed for, because we are not 100% unconscious. There are people struggling to figure out how to control population, struggling to figure out how to balance the relationship between the masculine and the feminine, struggling to bring amelioration of hunger and disease to various parts of the world. So we're in essentially a tragic situation. A tragic situation is a catastrophe when you know it, you see. And part of the Western impulse has been to subjugate all other cultural styles to our own. And this has taken the form of actually swallowing and digesting Native American culture. The ethnicity of European culture has been replaced by the mega culture of Nouveau Europa, whatever that means. Cultures are melted down in the belly of the Western scientific beast, and then they become structural members in an ever-expanding edifice of Western scientism. However, the psychedelic experience, as practiced by shamans in many, many parts of the world, is apparently a bite too large to swallow. Psychedelics arrived on the Western agenda only about 100 years ago, when German chemists brought peyote to Berlin and extracted mescaline. And for the next 50 years, up until about 1945, 55 years make it, very little happened. Mescaline did not, though it was taken by Havelock Ellis and William James and F. Weir Mitchell, and it did not spawn a craze. It did not influence large numbers of intellectuals, particularly. Then in the 40s, LSD was discovered. In the 50s, DMT and psilocybin were discovered. And then in 1966, all these things were made illegal. There was no real opportunity for Western science to grapple with these things before they were decided to be too hot to handle, made not only unavailable to people such as you and I, ordinary people, but taken off the agenda of scientific research. In the Middle Ages, the church forbade dissection of human bodies. And medical students would visit battlefields and the gallows at night and steal the bodies of victims of war and executed prisoners in order to learn human physiology. Where that spirit of scientific courage has gone, I don't know, but there's very little of it left. Now people feed at the trough of government grants and enormous corporate research budgets, and the idea of actually pursuing truth or attempting to understand the phenomenon in an unbiased fashion, divorced from its commercial, social, and political dimensions, is unheard of.